And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
And welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With it till 3 on this Thursday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, the NBA playoffs continuing on in the round of the Final Four. Plus, Tiger Woods has teed off. We'll keep you up to date throughout the afternoon on the latest from the PGA Championship in Oklahoma. Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher sparring verbally over the past about 16 hours. We'll get to that audio and break it all down. What could getting rid of divisions in college football mean for certain programs like South Carolina? We'll also catch up with a member of the Charleston Battery later on. We'll give away some tickets to the Charleston Battery's game this weekend. And I'll also touch on the agreement they came to when it came to the national soccer teams this week as well. Plenty to do throughout the afternoon. You can join the conversation throughout. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com. Or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there. Or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online right there at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing well on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. Yeah. Had to remember what day it was. Tigers on the course. How could you not be happy when the big cat's on the prowl? We have jousting between college coaches. Unbelievable. And a good night of basketball last night. Luke, glad to be here with you, sir.
Yeah, always a good day. Trent's on the Tiger Woods update desk. We'll get to that in a little bit. You know, see, the great thing, before I dive into everything, the great thing about ESPN Plus, call this a promo for ESPN Plus. When you go to ESPN.com, if you're a subscriber, I go to ESPN.com right here on the homepage. I'm watching Tiger Woods right now on the green. It's great. I don't have to log. I don't have to do anything. I don't know if that's going on in all ESPN.coms or just because I'm a Plus subscriber and logged in, but it just brings it right up for you on the homepage, able to watch the PGA Championship. We'll keep you posted throughout the afternoon on whatever Tiger does because we know that's what you're interested in. But let me start with this, with the NBA playoffs. Game one last night, the Warriors kind of embarrassed the Mavericks. I don't take much away from these first two game ones. Doesn't mean a whole lot for the series. For both these road teams, the goal, the objective on the road is just win one of the two. Steal home court advantage that way. So if the Mavericks come back and win game two, it doesn't matter that they got blown out last night. They did their job. And if the Celtics come back tonight and win game two in Miami, it doesn't matter what happened in the second half the other night. They did their job. You just need to split to go back home. Plus, it's game one of the series. Sometimes a little bit of feeling out process. The Celtics lost game one last round against Milwaukee, still won the series. The Mavericks have lost game one in both of the first two rounds and went on to win those series. So don't put too much into game one. These could be long series. Or maybe they'll wrap up in four games. But the chances are these series will go for a little while. And for the Dallas Mavericks, kind of like the Celtics, I told you going into that Celtics Heat game, teams coming off of game sevens only win their next game 39% of the time. Not a high probability. And so the Celtics faded in the second half. They were missing two of their starters. Didn't play well on the road, by the way, having to travel while the Heat were rested. And the Mavericks also played game seven on the road, had to go on the road again, albeit not that far. Warriors were more rested, and the Mavericks just didn't have it last night. They couldn't throw it in the ocean. Luka Doncic was lousy. He won't play that poorly again the rest of this round. He had as many turnovers as made baskets, and none of his teammates could step up either. They couldn't knock down a shot from outside. So the Warriors get the win last night, start off 1-0, but when it comes to these playoff series, they could go on for a long time. So let's not overreact to the first game. But what impresses me, you know, as I was watching the Warriors, what impresses me most is about how they have done this. You look at this roster and this lineup. Their coach, Steve Kerr, was never a head coach before getting the job in Golden State. Steph Curry, their star, was drafted 7th out of Davidson. What's interesting about Steph Curry, by the time he's done, he may be higher on the all-time great list than he was on the draft board. He was drafted 7th. He may be a top 6 player by the time he retires. And that happens for, you know, some guys. I'd have to go back and look. But like Jordan, you know, was the 3rd overall pick. He's, I think, the greatest of all time. But maybe not to the level of a Steph Curry being drafted 7th. He'll outrank that with where he is listed all time. Klay Thompson, 11th pick overall out of Washington State. Right, Draymond Green was drafted in the 2nd round. Jordan Poole was at the end of the 1st round. He was in the G League last year. Kevon Looney was last pick of the 1st round. Andrew Wiggins was the highest drafted player, but he was seen as a bust until he arrived in Golden State. Now, last night, the Warriors had 7 guys in double figures. And Looney and Wiggins played great defense, and Wiggins did a great job on Luka. And it shows on Golden State, right? He looks different on Golden State. He looks revitalized. And a lot of this is about fit for Wiggins specifically. It's a second chance for him, different location. You get out of that city where there's a lot of pressure on you. With Golden State, he doesn't have to be a star. He's playing with great pieces around him, good culture. But that's also a credit to Golden State, the organization, and the job they've done and what they've built with these guys. But here on the Morrow Midday Show, we talk a lot about fit and how important fit is for all of us in relationships, in jobs, especially for athletes, where they wind up. If you look at a Tom Brady, right, he came into the league with a Bill Belichick, greatest coach of all time, and a top 5 defense. And when Brady won that Super Bowl the first year, he threw for 145 yards in the Super Bowl. It was a great fit. Now, look, Brady's developed into a great quarterback, but a lot of other quarterbacks don't get that opportunity to come in with a pretty good ground game, good defense, great coach. They don't have to do a whole lot and can still win a Super Bowl. Ben Roethlisberger lost 1 game his first year, went to the Super Bowl the 2nd year. He came into the league. Bill Cowher, Hall of Fame coach, and a great defense. Right, top defense in the league. Makes it a little bit easier. Not telling you that's the only reason for success, but if you go back and you look, Roethlisberger had very few games over 200 yards his first year. You can take your time, and they can ease you in, hand it off. You don't have to do too much. Wait until he's a little more developed. He knows the league. And then later on in Brady and Roethlisberger's career, they're slinging it all over the place. But early on, it was a little bit of an easier entry into the league than some of these other guys, than a Josh Rosen or a Baker Mayfield or whoever else you want to pick out over the years. In the NBA, Magic Johnson came into the league. Right, you have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's a pretty good teammate to step into the league with. Larry Bird came into Boston with a lot of talent around him. You know, Bird was the best player, but he had a lot of talent. We had Cedric Maxwell on the show the other day. He was the one that was the finals MVP in 81. Wasn't Bird, right? And then you also had McHale, and you had Parrish, and then you got Danny Ainge in there and Dennis Johnson, and, you know, even Bill Walton at the end of his career eventually wound up in Boston. They had a lot of talent throughout the 80s. Pete Maravich wound up there at one point. Everybody wanted to go play in Boston. Makes it a little bit easier for Larry Bird early on to be surrounded by so much talent. In a good organization, good coaching. Michael Jordan had to wait a little bit longer. LeBron James had to wait a little bit longer. Tim Duncan was drafted and slotted right next to David Robinson. You get the idea. So when you look at these teams remaining and you look at their top players, they're not from some sort of big-time school. Yeah, there's a Duke guy in there. Right, but you have Steph Curry out of Davidson. You have Klay Thompson out of Washington State. And Luka's international, didn't play college basketball here. And Jimmy Butler went to Marquette and was drafted at the end of the 1st round. And Jaylen Brown went to Cal. None of these stars remaining were either the number 1 or number 2 picks in the draft. A few of them, like Draymond Green, were drafted in the 2nd round. More 2nd round picks than top 2 picks remaining. Quarterbacks are the same way in the NFL. Most of the good quarterbacks in the NFL are not coming from the biggest schools. Very few actually come from Oklahoma State or Alabama. And typically, the quarterbacks drafted later on in the 1st round are more successful. Lamar Jackson was the last quarterback taken. Mac Jones was the last quarterback taken in the first round last year, was the only one to get to the playoffs. Or you even get the quarterbacks in later rounds like a Tom Brady, a Dak Prescott, a Russell Wilson. And the other thing, too, is that only one of the top six highest-paid players in the NBA is still playing in this postseason. In Major League Baseball last year, only two of the top 20 highest-paid players actually won a playoff series. In the NFL, only three of the top 10 highest-paid quarterbacks last year actually made it to the playoffs. Now, the Warriors will have the highest-paid player in the NBA next year in Steph Curry. But at least he is homegrown. They didn't go out and break the bank to bring him in. Certainly, he's deserving of it. And the point is, what the Warriors have shown is that it's still crucial when it comes to development and culture and good coaching. And this is how you can build a model for sustained success. I know they had Kevin Durant for a couple years there, but they had 73 wins before Durant got there and won a championship. I think they still would have won a championship or two without Kevin Durant. It just made it easier. And then fast forward a couple years, here they are, the favorites once again this year. With an older Draymond Green and a banged up Klay Thompson and a half step slower Steph Curry. And then you throw in Wiggins, who looked like a bust, and Poole, who was in the G League, and you mix it all together, and it leads to another team that they're the championship favorite still in the NBA. But you don't need to throw money around at a James Harden or Russell Westbrook. You don't need to try and just get the best players in the draft. The top draft picks don't necessarily bring you success. The most successful players usually aren't taken at the top of the draft. And not just in the NBA, but also in the NFL as well, at least when it comes to quarterbacks. Dan Marino was drafted at the end of the first round, fifth quarterback to go in that draft class. And we talked about this before, right, but about fit. You're going to a better team later on in the first round. It's not necessarily about the best players. It's about the fit. And I look at Golden State, at least based off of draft boards, they didn't necessarily get the best players. Steph Curry at 7, Klay Thompson at 11, Draymond Green in the second round, Jordan Poole at the end of the first round, Steve Kerr had never coached before. But then you put them all together and you develop this team and you build these guys, and Curry's obviously gotten a lot better than when he was coming out of Davidson. So too Draymond Green and Looney and Poole and now Wiggins as well. And you have a good culture and good coaching and a good front office, and you develop these guys and you know what you're doing around there, and you put them in a spot to succeed, and that's what helps lead to sustained success. Three championships a few years ago, and they're the favorite now. The most successful players usually aren't taken at the top of the draft. They just wind up in the best spot. And the teams that prioritize one player over the team also usually don't fare very well. Highest paid contracts in all sports usually don't work out. They usually don't work out for quarterbacks in the NFL. We haven't had a quarterback win a Super Bowl making, I think it's more than 15% of the salary cap. Major League Baseball, those big contracts usually don't work out. How many playoff wins has Bryce Harper brought the Phillies, or Mike Trout has brought the Angels, or even Otani has brought the Angels? That usually doesn't work. The Yankees broke the bank for Mike Stanton or Giancarlo Stanton, whatever. Hasn't brought them a World Series championship yet or even an appearance. Big contracts usually don't work in any of the sports. And when I look at the Golden State Warriors, yeah, you know, Steph Curry, he's going to make a lot of money. But it wasn't going out and throwing a lot of money to bring a guy in. He was drafted. He's worked his way up the way the NBA works after a certain number of years, right? You qualify for a certain amount of money. Curry's gotten to that point. But the teams that do not prioritize one player over the team, and the teams that are more about the fit and developing guys and don't need the top draft picks, those are the ones that can have that sustained success like a Golden State Warriors. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson were not great last night. In fact, Klay Thompson was terrible in the first half. Steph Curry wasn't far behind, at least to begin the game. Klay scored all 15 points in the second half. Curry made a few more shots, started shimmying in the third quarter. But the other guys stepped up. It wasn't so much about Curry and Klay last night. It was the others. I mean, Wiggins had a big night on both ends of the floor. Looney played well on both ends. Poole had a good game once again. It wasn't even the stars. It was the role players that had a big game. And right now, when I look at the remaining teams in the NBA, I'd rather have Luka Doncic than Steph Curry, even after his poor performance last night. Jimmy Butler is playing better than Steph Curry this postseason. And yet, Golden State is still the favorite to win it all. They've developed these pieces, good culture, well-run team, good organization, and they have built this team to sustain success over a number of years. It's not about just going out and paying the most for an available player. It's not about just drafting at the top of the draft every year. Instead, it's about a good fit, developing these guys, being a team, and having success over a long period of time. And that applies, really, in all sports. When we come back, we'll check in on the PGA Championship and find out how Tiger is doing so far today. Plus, we'll get to all the drama with Jimbo and Nick Saban. It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
On the street that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you've heard it all before, but you never really had a doubt. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get to all the drama with Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban and the sparring of words over the past about 16 hours between those two. But hey, don't forget that the 2022 Summer Golf Tour continues, well, all summer long. And the next golf course will go on sale Monday following the weekend at 8 a.m. This week, this past Monday, the foursome sold out in 8 minutes. So set your alarms, put it on your calendar, get ready to go, get up early if you have to on Monday, and be there online, charlestonsportsradio.com, to get your foursome for just 98.9. Starting Monday, after the weekend, 8 a.m. online, charlestonsportsradio.com, as we head into week number 2 out of 10 this year in the 2022 Summer Golf Tour. So we're just getting started. These foursomes always fly off the shelves. Make sure you're ready to go Monday, 8 a.m., to get your foursome for next week as part of the 2022 Summer Golf Tour here for ESPN Radio Charleston. Online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Speaking of golf, we'll get to the Jimbo and Saban stuff, but we got the PGA Championship going on in Oklahoma right now. And you got Tiger Woods out there on the course as he teed off this morning just after 9 a.m. And it's a big story. We're all curious to see how Tiger does. So we put Trent back on the Tiger Woods update desk. And for the first time today, we'll keep you posted throughout the afternoon. But we need to find out, how is Tiger doing so far today?
Tiger Woods, PGA Tour.
Luke, Tiger started off incredibly hot, was birdie, and I believe back-to-back birdies, 1 and 2. But right now, he's cooling off a little bit. They started on the back nine, so went 9 to 18, and now we're going 1 to 10, or 1 to 9, excuse me. Right now, Tiger is tied for 35th place at +1 right now, and he is on the green, just made a birdie, just shot a birdie attempt, and is about a couple feet from the hole right now. So we will keep you all updated on what Tiger is doing throughout the day. Tied for 36 now at +1. Decent start to the day, Luke. This course is running tough, though. Greens are running tough right now.
He's in the group with Rory, right?
Rory and Jordan Spieth. I mean, that's a phenomenal group to get started round one of the PGA Championship.
Yeah, I see Spieth is 2 over, so he's doing worse than Tiger right now. But Rory's in the lead right now.
Rory
at 4
is
under.
In the lead, yeah. He's playing very, very well.
How about that? I saw a photo. It was a little humorous, but also kind of sad, where they have a photo of Rory in the media area, and he was holding his daughter.
Mm.
And he said, that's a photo from when Daddy was good. And, like, I love the self-awareness.
Oh.
But it's also kind of sad when you think, I know he's, I'm sure he's just joking around, but there's some truth, I'm sure there's some truth in his head that he realizes he hasn't been the same golfer as a few years ago.
Since the Masters collapse?
Yeah.
Is that when it all started, when he cried, you know, on the back nine?
Yeah, and it's kind of sad. He's got his young daughter there, and he's, you know, he's even, he's so aware of it that he's even got to, you know, crack a joke to her. His little young daughter in his arms. That's back when I was actually winning events. But anyways, he's leading, he's off to a good start today. We'll see. We're just getting started in this whole thing. We'll see if he can keep it up. By the way, I saw the photo. Tiger was already chowing down on the course. Had a chicken salad sandwich. Trent, are you a chicken salad guy?
Not really a chicken salad guy, but I mean, Tiger just housing a chicken salad sandwich at 9:15 in the morning. What more could you want from the big cat? I mean, he is fueling up, ready to go. The body looks good. Walking around the course, Luke, I've been noticing, obviously he's using the club as a cane just like he was at the Masters, but he looks better. The swing looks good, and he's been hitting those stinger shots. And I don't know how many stinger shots he hit at the Masters, but the stinger looks good, and we need Tiger hitting the stingers, Luke.
This is not as hilly of a course, not as tough of a course to walk as the Masters in Augusta. So hopefully that helps Tiger because
should.
Yeah, you'd like to think because I'm sure he kind of wore down as well walking that course for 4 days. By the way, are you an egg salad sandwich guy at all?
No, not an egg salad sandwich guy. Not like Oscar when he, you know, went on the plane in the office That's and he brought egg salad sandwiches for everybody. That's a horrible move, first of all. Never bring an egg salad sandwich on a plane. No, I'm not really. Are you a chicken salad or an egg salad sandwich guy?
No, I'm not. I don't know why. I think it's kind of like the texture of it. I don't know. I don't like it. I obviously love chicken. I'll eat eggs. But I don't like mixing it with mayo, mixing it all. No, thank you. The other one, too, is tuna. I like tuna. Not really like a tuna salad guy. Tuna salad sandwich or anything.
Would you eat tuna out of the can?
Yeah, I'll eat out of the can.
Wow.
And sometimes at home, I'll just put it on some bread and I'll eat it that way.
Sure.
But like if you go to a Subway or any place, like a Jimmy John's, I don't know. There's something about, you see that tuna. I mean, it's probably not real tuna. That's why. There's something about it that turns me off.
I believe the Subway tuna was made with yoga mats, if I'm not mistaken, or the material they make yoga mats with. I read something about that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, absolutely horrible. Eat fresh. Yeah, all right.
Eating a yoga mat. Yeah. I don't know. So maybe that's why I stay away from the tuna. I go to these delis or sandwich shops. It's just something about it doesn't look good. But I'll eat tuna right out of the can. No problem. I like that. Hey, I think Tiger got the best draw. You know, I'd rather have, if I'm Tiger, I'd rather tee off in the morning today, afternoon tomorrow. You get more time to recover. You get out there today where it's hot. It's warm this morning, but not as warm or hot, obviously, as the day wears on. You know, people know if you're going to go out golfing, you usually get out there early. Now, even earlier than 9 for Tiger. You want to get out there like 6 or 7 when you're in a really hot climate. But you get the idea. Hopefully it's not as warm this morning. His body can hold up a little bit better. And then you have more time. If you tee off in the afternoon and you come back, quick turnaround for somebody like Tiger, that's even tougher on the body. So he teed off this morning, and then tomorrow will be the afternoon, right?
Be the afternoon, yeah. And he just another 3-putt on the second hole, which will be 12 for them since they're going from 10 to 18, 1 to 9. So he's on the second hole right now and just bogeyed. So he is now plus 2 alongside Jordan Spieth. Ooh. Who, as we speak, is putting right now for a par putt. He is in his stroke. Sets up, Luke. Here we go. Short putt here. See if Jordan Spieth can overcome the pressure. And he takes a stop. He's got to check it over again, Luke. We can move on. Check it over again.
Jeez, pace of play in this sport, let me tell you. Now, I know you took a flyer on Tiger winning the whole thing.
I did, yeah. I mean, the odds were just too good, Luke. Too good not to. And every time he's on the course, you know, it's childhood memories. It's the whole thing. I want to see the guy win. So hopefully putting a little juice on it will make Tiger play a little better. If you're listening, Tiger, I know you're
That's
not
right.
since you're on the course.
That's right. His caddy's listening. I don't remember what sports book it was, but they said if Tiger wins this weekend, it'll be the biggest loss they ever have.
Oh, I'm sure.
With the amount of people that bet and then just the odds, too, because he was, what did you say, plus 7?
Plus 7,000 to win it all.
Yeah. And people are going to bet on Tiger regardless. So if Tiger wins this weekend, that's going to put a real dent into Las Vegas, which I don't think people mind. Speaking of bets, I had somebody reach out yesterday asking when Trent's going to get pied in the face. So we still have to, don't you believe that I'm letting him off the hook? We still have to figure out the logistics of this so that we could pie Trent in the face at some point.
Yeah, we're thinking, do we do it before the show? Do we do it during the show? Do we do it fan talk or after the show? Who knows?
Yeah,
who
we'll
knows?
See. But somebody said they want to be here to see it. So they really want to see Trent get pied. We're going to start charging admission.
Oh, yeah.
Come on in and see him get hit in the face with a chicken pot pie.
It's a pay-per-view event, folks.
That's right. Steaming hot chicken pot pie right to the face. When we come back, we'll get into all the Saban and Jimbo drama. We'll play the audio for you. I'll give you my opinion. We'll break it all down. Speaking of a pay-per-view event, Jimbo and Saban, that game should be fun this year. We'll get to all that nonsense, the drama, the sparring of words when we come back. It's the Mar Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mar Midday Show.
You're throwing away a fortune and feeling, but someday you'll pay.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get to the sparring between Saban and Jimbo Fisher when it comes to name, image, and likeness in college football. This is the big story going on because I love the drama. So Nick Saban, they were holding some sort of event last night in Alabama. Nate Oates, the basketball coach, was there as well. And the clip that went out was like a seven-minute. It was Saban's seven-minute soliloquy talking about name, image, and likeness. And I watched the whole thing last night. I watched it again today. It's actually really good. I would like to play all 7 minutes. I've never been to the school. I don't think that's great radio. I would play all 7 minutes because I think Saban actually makes some good points, and I think it's worth listening to. So you can go online and find it. But let's just get to the drama, the juicy stuff. Because towards the end of his seven-minute response in regards to name, image, and likeness, Saban had some strong words for Jimbo, Deion Sanders, even Miami basketball. Here's a portion of what Nick Saban, this is what started all of this. Maybe you haven't heard the clips, you just heard about it, you've heard about the drama. Here's what started it all. This is what Saban had to say last night in regards to name, image, and likeness in college sports.
But I know the consequence is going to be difficult for the people who are spending tons of money to get players. And you've read about them, you know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year, A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. All right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it. Yeah. So it's tough, and this is not going to change because they cannot enforce their rules, just like Nate said. We have a rule right now that says you cannot use name, image, and likeness to entice a player to come to your school. Hell, read about it in the paper. I mean, Jackson State paid a guy $1 million last year that was a really good Division I player to come to school. It was in the paper, and they bragged about it. Nobody did anything about it. I mean, these guys at Miami that are going to play basketball there for $400,000, it's in the newspaper. The guy tells you how he's doing it. But the NCAA can't enforce their rules because it's not against the law. And that's an issue. That's a problem. And unless we get something that protects them from litigation, I don't know what we're going to do about it.
So that was Saban last night. Those were the comments that began all of this. And it's interesting to see somebody like Nick Saban actually come out directly at other coaches with as harsh of words as he issued there, talking about name, image, and likeness, taking direct shots at one of his former assistants, Jimbo Fisher, and then also Deion Sanders and Miami basketball as well. Now, immediately, Deion Sanders put out a tweet, you know, upset with the comments from Saban. This was last night, and Deion said he would address things today. And then this morning, Jimbo Fisher called for a press conference at 11 o'clock Eastern time and really went on about this whole thing. Now, first, before we get to the Jimbo audio, let me bring up this Deion tweet. He's got a lot of tweets. He said, last night, Deion Sanders, in response to that Saban comment, tweeted, "You best believe I will address that lie Coach Saban told tomorrow. I was awakened by my son that sent me the article stating that we paid Travis Hunter $1 million to play at Jackson State. We, as a people, don't have to pay our people to play with our people," is what Coach Prime said. And then he followed it up with another tweet, said, "Stay tuned." Then he retweeted that. And he's been tweeting about it today. So we'll see if we get some sort of official, you know, verbal response from Deion Sanders. But we did get one from Jimbo today. He called an emergency press conference at 11 a.m. Eastern time. Here was a portion of what Jimbo had to say in regards to the comments from Nick Saban last night.
First of all, I'll say it's a shame that we have to do this. It's really despicable. It's despicable that somebody can say things about somebody and an organ. More importantly, 17-year-old kids. You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families. And they broke state laws. They're all money. We bought every player on this group. We never bought anybody. No rules were broken. Nothing was done wrong. It was all in the way we do things, the ethics in which we do things. And these families, it's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen, and it's ridiculous. But when he's not on top, and the parity in college football he's been talking about, go talk to coaches who coach for him. You'll find out all the parody. Go dig into wherever he's been. You can find out anything. And it's a shame that you got to sit here and defend 17-year-old kids and families and Texas A&M because we do things right. We're always going to do things right. But we're always going to be here.
That was part of what Jimbo said this morning. Again, it'd be a press conference worth playing the entire thing if we didn't have other things to do throughout the afternoon here on the show. There were some other strong comments. Jimbo Fisher said that Saban is he said hasn't talked to Saban, but Saban did try to call him. He reached out to him, and Jimbo said he's not going to take his call and that he's done. He's done with Saban. He also said, quote, you coach with people like Bobby Bowden and learn how to do things. You coach with other people and learn how not to do things. There's a reason I haven't gone back to work for him. Those are strong words. More quotes from Jimbo Fisher. He showed you who he is. He's the greatest ever, huh? When you've got all the advantages, it's easy. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy. You may find out. I feel like I'm reading. You may find out about a guy a lot of things you don't want to know. All right, I get it now. That's what he had to say about Nick Saban. More quotes from Jimbo Fisher. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. The other part that was left out. We built him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past. These are strong words from Jimbo. Somebody who has worked under Nick Saban seems to be alluding to something that he knows, but he doesn't want to squeal. He knows the secrets and what Saban's been doing over the years, or at least that's what he's alluding to. But he doesn't want to be a snitch. He doesn't want to be the one to just come out and say it. He's telling you, go do some digging and find it yourself. But there's things to be found there. Jimbo knows maybe where the bodies are buried. He's trying to lead you there. He's not going to dig them up himself, but he's trying to kind of point you in the direction. Hey, go look over there. You'll find something over there. Now, I think in regards to Jimbo holding the press conference, I think maybe it's just me. I don't know. To me, it comes off as like a little defensive. Was it really necessary to hold like an emergency press conference this morning? I think you could do just fine putting out a statement saying like it's not true. We haven't bought players. I don't know what Coach Saban's talking about. But to go up there and like make it personal and take personal shots and throw him under the bus, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm reading it wrong. I feel like that's somebody who's a little defensive, backed in a corner. Now, look, I wouldn't like to be accused of something I didn't do. But if I really wasn't worried about something, do I need to hold a press conference and address it for a half hour? Or do I just say, no, that's not true, and move forward knowing that I didn't do anything. I got nothing to hide. I got nothing to be worried about. Saban said, what about me? Oh, that's nonsense. Whatever. I'm moving on with my day. Now, I don't like when people make things up about me, but if there's no truth to it or if there's nothing to it, I don't know. I feel like I just brush past it instead of holding a press conference where you rip the guy for a while. And I also don't think the other thing that stood out, I don't think anyone's attacking or Saban was attacking like the 17-year-olds. I think really he was kind of attacking you, Jimbo, and the school. Don't try to curry pity by talking about these poor kids and their families. I don't think anyone's talking about that. You could get $1 million, you take that $1 million. I think it's more about what Texas A&M is doing to get those kids to go there specifically. Here is Paul Feinbaum this morning on Get Up, giving his reaction to this whole thing after the strong words from Saban last night.
Brian, I am gobsmacked by what he said. Not because I haven't heard him insinuate that privately, but for Nick Saban, the greatest coach of all time, to go public and accuse one of his biggest rivals of essentially cheating, although that's open for interpretation, is really stunning. He has insinuated this in the past, but one thing you have to remember about Nick Saban, he always is complimentary toward everyone else, even when you know it's passive-aggressive. But this was way off script. He's been leading toward this for some time, but that volcano erupted last night.
It sure did. How worried do you think Saban is that this could impact Alabama's dominance?
Well, I think he's very worried. Let's remember a couple of things. He lost to Jimbo Fisher last year in College Station, first time he had ever lost to one of his assistants. He lost a national championship game to another assistant. And now you have a new force in recruiting. And some people will say, well, Alabama has everything going for them. They do. They put more players through the pros. They do this. They do that. However, they do not have as deep a pockets to buy players as Texas A&M. Texas A&M is an oil-rich state. Alabama is not. And I think that's really what really concerns Saban here. These new collectives, which are way too complicated to explain in a short period of time, are giving boosters the right to go out and bring players in, even though it's technically against the NCAA rules. But Ryan, guess what? There's no such thing as NCAA rules anymore. It's the wild, wild west. The NCAA really doesn't care, despite what they say. So if you want to cheat, It's open season.
Feinbaum this morning talking about this. Now, my thoughts. First off, when Feinbaum said about the collectives, yeah, collectives have become just a workaround. The idea is that coaches are not supposed to be involved in this stuff, and boosters are not supposed to be providing money to bring players to the school. The idea, the original idea of name, image, and likeness was that once these athletes become collegiate athletes, you could start making some money off of your autographs, jerseys, you could get a job, whatever. This is what Saban also said during his response last night, his full response. That was the idea. What it has turned into, as we know it, is just simply buying players. The idea of paying players so they'll just come to your campus. Now, the original guideline said, right, boosters, coaches, you can't just pay a kid to come on campus. So what you do now is these quote-unquote collectives, it's like a marketing agency, it's a third party. The boosters give them the money, and then they give money to the players. So it's not technically boosters paying these kids to come to campus. You're running it through somebody else, through some sort of quote-unquote marketing firm. And that's what gets the kids there. But you know where the money's coming from, and it's a pool of money that you can give to these kids that if they come to your school and you pay it to them before they even play a game for you. And that's where I think a lot of the issue is with name, image, and likeness. I can tell you that's where my issue is. I was for name, image, and likeness, but the original idea of, hey, a kid plays for Clemson football, sure, he can go out and do a signing at a local pizza shop. He can get money off of his jersey being sold in the team store. If they come out with another video game, put him in the game, his actual name, he could get money off of that. All that stuff. But I don't like the idea of a kid getting X number of dollars just to come to that school. Because now we're straying into the idea of just like salaries. Just pay the kids salaries to come play college football or college basketball. And that becomes a very slippery slope. Now, what has Texas A&M done or not done? I don't know. But the reason why many are skeptical of their tactics was because Jimbo just signed more blue chip players this year than all his other years at Texas A&M combined. Right, when name, image, and likeness suddenly becomes a thing and some teams are truly buying players. And Texas A&M put together the best recruiting class we've ever seen. Maybe it's a coincidence or maybe there is something behind it. Remember, Lane Kiffin also made some comments about how we're going to have a luxury tax for some of these schools in college football. So we know this is a thing in college football. The idea why Texas A&M was able to put together such a good recruiting class was because they're throwing money around. And on signing day, Jimbo Fisher, I believe we played the audio on the show, he got very defensive. He did not like that. He was very upset in his press conference of the idea, as we just heard there again, defending himself against this idea of paying players. Who knows what's truly going on? I imagine all the top teams are doing something along those lines. Maybe not as strong as Texas A&M, and that's why they had the number one recruiting class. Alabama was number two. And, as Jimbo alluded to, if we read between the lines, I imagine he's saying that Saban's been up to no good long before name, image, and likeness, and for years, and that's why he's been successful, and go look into his background and dig up the dirt of what he's done. You know, who is he to throw me under the bus with some of the things he's done? But when it comes to Nick Saban, two theories or two reasons why you go out there and you do it. Because he's a former assistant of yours. I would assume they were at least previously having a good relationship. Now Jimbo claims that relationship's done with. I think there's two things. Either one, like Feinbaum said there, maybe he is worried. Texas A&M just beat Alabama for the first time and then put together the number one recruiting class. Maybe it's a coincidence or maybe it's the timing of it that now Saban's coming out taking shots at Texas A&M. He's worried. They just beat him. They got the number one recruiting class. You got a national championship head coach over there. They're spending money. All right, they spent money on Jimbo, on facilities. They're trying to compete and keep up. And maybe Saban sees them closing in, and he's trying to keep them at an arm's length. Or the second idea would be that maybe this wasn't so much about Jimbo. He just got caught kind of in the stray fire. Maybe it was more about who was in the room. Because Nick Saban always will issue warnings. We know this about Nick. Whenever he complains, and he actually complains quite a bit about college football. But they're not so much complaints as they are warnings. He used to complain about the changes in offense in college football. And when nothing was done about it, he went out and he hired people to capitalize on those changes and put together now one of the best offenses in the country year after year and continues to win big. Put quarterbacks now actually in the NFL that teams want. And when he complains about the transfer portal and then uses it, you know, they brought in a couple of good transfers this current offseason that will help. And when you complain about name, image, and likeness, maybe it's not so much taking a shot at Jimbo and Texas A&M or being fearful of them, but maybe it's more about the crowd that was in Birmingham last night. There was one particular phrase that he said in that clip that I forgot to jot down while I listened to it, and I don't want to play the whole clip because it's about a minute and a half, but something along the lines of trying to keep up. It's hard for us to keep up. I think he's sending a message not to Jimbo or to college football, but maybe to people in the room, because in that room was a group of business leaders in the second largest city in Alabama. Maybe that's a message like, look what Texas A&M is doing, and if you want us to continue to compete, we're going to have to do this. And I go back to what Feinbaum was talking about there, where you have these boosters, you know, pour money into a collective. Maybe that was the message to those people in the room. Like, if you want us to continue to be at the top of the sport, this is the direction in which the sport's going in. I'm going to need you guys to give more money into that collective that we could spend on guys. Maybe it was more about those in the room than those outside of the room, like a Jimbo Fisher. He just happened to be maybe the person standing by that unfortunately got hit with those words. Now, for those who say Saban is a hypocrite, look at their school. Bryce Young made $1 million last year. Maybe it's splitting hairs, but Saban's point was the guys were already on campus before they started making money at Alabama, that they weren't getting paid to come to Alabama in the first place. They were already there and then started to make money. Now, maybe that's semantics. You could have some, you know, backroom dealings where you're not going to get paid at first, but once we get you on campus, we'll get you some deals. Right, who knows? But that's how Nick Saban justifies the difference in Alabama and name, image, and likeness and what maybe a school like Texas A&M is doing. They're not giving the money to kids right out of high school to come to campus, but once you're on campus and part of the program, like Bryce Young and that $1 million deal we were led to believe a year ago from Saban himself, that was before Bryce ever played a game. But he was already in the program. He had already been there. That's how I would assume Saban kind of qualifies it in his head, the difference. Well, we're not like them. We bring the kids out of high school onto campus cleanly, and then they get paid. But boy, am I looking forward to this year's matchup. October 8th?
October 8th. 142 days until Jimbo and Nick Saban battle it out. Hopefully they'll just meet, you know, midfield and just, you know, three rounds real quick.
That's right.
See if we can throw some fisticuffs.
I was thinking about that this morning, actually. Like, what if we put them in a ring? I think it'd be bad news. Saban's 70 years old, and Jimbo has a little craziness to him.
Yeah.
I think at this point, if we went back 10 years, it could be different. I think Jimbo may pummel Saban if you actually put him in a ring, especially after those words this morning.
Yeah, Jimbo would piece him up. It wouldn't be close.
Yeah. But, boy, would that be fascinating when they meet, if they meet. Maybe they do the blow-by, blow each other off. Don't even shake hands after that game. And I'm just curious how that game's going to go. Because, again, of course, Texas A&M beat Alabama this past year. So if that doesn't make Saban angry enough, now you get this little battle of words this offseason, and this is not going to be the end of it. I'm sure this is going to continue on. And I'm sure Jimbo is, just based off of his comments this morning, he took this personally. He's not going to let that go away. This becomes a grudge now. So that's going to be fun. And if Alabama has the chance, I wouldn't be surprised if Saban really tries to bury Texas A&M on October 8th, mostly just for them beating him a year ago. But that'll be a fun game. Last thing I'll say on this, at least for now, we'll probably circle back to this throughout the afternoon because it's a big story right now. But it is funny about Saban talking about parity, right? Just the other day, we need more parity in college football. And then when Texas A&M brings in the number one recruiting class, now he's crying foul, like, wait, hold on. This isn't right. What is Texas A&M doing getting all this talent? They must be doing something illegal. So it's kind of like, you know, which one do you want? But I don't know if Saban's message last night was so much about Jimbo or a message to the NCAA, like, look at what they're doing over there at Texas A&M. That needs to be investigated. Maybe it's more for his own guys, for the people in the room, saying, hey, this is the way the sport's going. Look at what they're doing in our conference. And if you want us to continue to be as successful as we are, that's what we have to compete with. You know, start throwing. It's asking for money without coming out. You can't just ask for money. Like, hey, why don't you guys give us more money to pay these kids? You can't do that. But you have to build that threat. Like, here's what happening. Here's what is happening. It's like a telethon on TV. Without your donations, PBS can't continue. And you, oh, no more PBS. I got to donate. Maybe that's more what Saban was doing last night. This certainly will continue. We'll see if Dion issues some sort of statement or does a press conference of his own this afternoon, as he wasn't happy. In the meantime, we'll wrap up Hour 1 when we come back. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Wrapping up hour one of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We were talking about the drama with Saban and Jimbo Fisher and the war of words the last 2 days. Lane Kiffin was asked by Bruce Feldman his thoughts on the matter, and he said, speechless for the first time in my life. Lane Kiffin also said, I was thinking, this can't really be happening. Is this real life? I still haven't moved from my seat. That should have been on pay-per-view. I guess he's not speechless after. That's one of those phrases that, and I love Lane, but just in general, I think that's a phrase we kind of overuse or misuse. I'm speechless, but let me tell you all my thoughts afterwards. A former SEC assistant told Bruce Feldman, there has always been an honor amongst thieves mantra in the league. And those two just called each other's wives fat to a global audience. That's a fair point. All right, Jimbo alluded to Saban doing some things. If you have some skeletons in your closet, you probably shouldn't be calling out others, which maybe is what Saban did last night. And then Jimbo's like, hey, I thought we had this unspoken agreement that we both look the other way with what we're doing at our programs. Everybody's doing it. But if you want to bring it out in public, we'll go there too. I don't think Nick Saban likes the direction of college football. You know, he's old school. He's 70 years old. He's been in the sport for a long time. I don't think he likes this idea of name, image, likeness and buying players and collectives. But at the same time, I also think that message last night was even more to boosters to get with the times than it was to Jimbo Fisher to stop what he's doing. But maybe that's just me. Hour two next.